If you're not a follower of Rebecca's blog, you need to be, because she is insightful, humorous, and authentic, and I appreciate your sharing, Rebecca. And Stuart, thank you for the opportunity. Monday morning when he called and asked if I would be available to speak and explain the situation, certainly you want to say yes to your friends. And so I really said yes without giving it a whole lot of thought. I was looking forward to hearing John Valenzuela. He's got a great story, and I'll be back in November to hear him share. You're going to want to hear him, and you're going to want to eat his food. But I also appreciate the folks at Southern Creations because they do a great job. The topic that Stuart asked me to share was balancing public service and the pastorate. And it's a conversation that I've had with a lot of folks when they find out that I'm a pastor and an elected official. And they often say, how do you do that? How do you wear two hats? How do you balance it? I mean, is that even legal? Yes, it's legal. Not necessarily recommended in all cases, but it is legal. But it's a conversation I've had, but I've never really given a talk about it. So after Stuart asked me to share this, I don't know if you've heard the story of the frog and the centipede. The frog is one day watching the centipede walk, moving his hundreds of legs, and he says to him, I don't know how you do it. He said, I have two back legs and two front legs, and I can barely land, and you've got 100 legs. I don't know how you walk. And the centipede said, well, you know, really, it's just a matter of, well, let me think about it. How do I do that? And next thing you know, the centipede's paralyzed because he can't figure out how to do it. He just does it. And in some ways, that's kind of how I approach today, because I just do it. I haven't given a whole lot of thought. So when you talk about giving some guidelines or some keys to balance, what are those things? And it was very helpful for me to spend some time reflecting on that. Before I get into the six keys, and on your table, if you're interested, I have a little half sheet of paper that you can fill in some blanks if you're interested. If not, you can make paper airplanes out of them, and they fly very well. If you fold them just right. Let me just give you a little background on me, and so you'll understand how I got to where I am. I never thought I would be doing both public service and ministry. As a teenager, I felt called to ministry. I was the president of the Fellowship of Christian Students at Pineville High School. I started a band Bible study. I was known as preacher in high school. It was pretty much evident what career path I was going to take. I attended Louisiana College before transferring to a school in McAllen, Texas called Kingsway Missionary Institute, where after learning how to speak Spanish and understanding the culture and language, I went to Mexico for several years, and God blessed me to be able to help form a network of churches that you can see on the screen down there in the Yucatan Peninsula, and I still go down there once a year to visit and do leadership development with our network of churches. 1991, I moved back to Pineville to be associate pastor with my father, who is the founder of Christian Challenge, the church I currently pastor. And I was always involved in events that were outside the four walls of the church. I love the things that don't necessarily identify a church name, but really lift up the name of Jesus. That's why I love things like March for Jesus. Some of you might remember back in the 90s, we had 7 years of marches down Main Street and across the river in Alexandria. And one of the things that we did was ask people, if you're going to bring your church van, cover up the name of your church on the side of the van, and let's just make signs about Jesus. Because the idea of bringing people together has always been attractive to me. But I always have thought that Christians should be involved in the political process. It's been something that I guess as a younger person, seeing people who involve themselves in using their Christian faith to formulate public policy was inspirational to me. I never thought I would run for city council. I just supported candidates and causes that I believed in. And then in 2003, a friend of mine, many of you may remember him, Randy King, had recently been elected to the Pineville City Council representing my district. I had supported Randy and even helped design his push card and was happy to see him win. And he unfortunately died just 8 months into the office of having served as city councilman. I was actually on the Amazon River when I got the news that Randy had passed away. And when I came back, I went to Mayor Fields and said, I don't know, but I feel like maybe I should offer myself to run in that seat. And he encouraged me, as he would encourage anybody who wants to serve. And I was fortunate to win that election, that special election, and have been reelected 4 times since, thankfully without opposition. So I've only had to walk the streets one time, that first time in 2003. So how do I balance? I see public service as an extension of ministry. both are service. In pastoral ministry, the things that you're doing is serving people. You're serving them in church life through the pastoral ministry, through grief support, through celebrations of life, through spiritual decision making, discipleship. You serve people in practical ways. And in public office, and the role that I have as a city council, you're helping people with things like drainage and trash that didn't get picked up, or a loose dog, or setting policy for the city. And I'm happy to see my fellow councilman Kevin Dorn here, who I went to high school with at Pineville High School many, many years ago. And he and I have many wonderful, spirited conversations and are grateful for the opportunity we have to help set the tone for the city of Pineville. But the reality is that public service and pastoral service are service. They're about serving. So I don't necessarily see them as competing. They are like parallel tracks of a railroad for me in my personal life. Being on the council has opened up a lot of amazing doors of opportunity and ways to serve. Besides serving my little district, which is mainly Sousek Drive area, Donahue, 28 East, that area, I'm able to serve on the Rapides Area Planning Commission as a commissioner there with the Metropolitan Planning Organization to help set the guidelines and for funds, for transportation funds to be spent throughout Central Louisiana. I've been blessed the last few years to serve as an executive vice president for the Louisiana Municipal Association. I succeeded my fellow councilman Kevin Dorn in that role. Serve on the board of the Louisiana Municipal Advisory Technical Services Bureau. Serve on the board of Rapides Regional Medical Center. All of these things are doors that opened, I think, because the Lord allowed me to walk through that first door of service in public life. I want to mention to you, though, how those things can work together. There's a graphic we're going to put on the page, on the screen, which is the Louisiana Municipal Association prayer breakfast. About 7 years ago, Rich Dupree and I had approached the leadership of the Louisiana Municipal Association at their annual conference and said, hey, y'all have this prayer breakfast every year, and it's really not much to it. I mean, you have somebody that prays a prayer blessing over the food, and then you get somebody from the Department of Environmental Quality to talk about watershed developments, and that's not really a prayer breakfast. And they said, well, we are municipal people. We don't know nothing about birthing. No, we don't know. That was a different line. We don't know about prayer. Why don't you take it? And so Rich and I had the opportunity to be organizing that over the last several years. And I see Dr. Rick Brewer here and the Voices of Louisiana College. He was one of our early speakers. Coach Dennis Dunn, when he was coaching at Louisiana College, was the primary speaker for us. We have seen that event grow from that last year that we didn't do, it was probably 50 or 60 people, to over 1,000 people every year come out and hear inspirational messages and get motivated, and it has become a highlight. This page is actually from the Louisiana Municipal Association's Municipal Review magazine, and they're highlighting the success of that. I would say that probably the highlight for me in public service, though, besides the ability and the opportunity to formulate guidelines for public policy, ordinances, resolutions, watching over the fiscal trust of the city of Pineville. For me personally, the highlight is the opportunity to have input into the lives of fellow public officials. I cannot tell you how many times I've had the opportunity to pray with a mayor or a council person or someone in an elected office over a situation in their life that they have trusted me with. It could be a wayward child or a marital issue or a personal struggle, something that's going on that they know that because I'm elected, I understand their fight, but they know that because I'm a pastor, I can keep a secret. And I've had that opportunity to serve with them, to pray with them, to support them, and point them to Jesus. And that is the highest opportunity that I have. And I'm so grateful for that. But back to the topic, what do you do to balance public service and the pastorate? Now, what's funny is that's a topic that's pretty specific to me, because how many in here are both pastors and public service servants? Ricky, that's right. Okay, so Ricky, I'll do the first part, I'll tag, and you'll take the second part. Really, it's kind of like a specific topic, right? How do you make that generalized? Well, I wanted to share a reality with you that we all wear multiple hats. We all are involved in multiple things, whether you're a business owner, as a parent, as a administrator of a organization. You wear different kinds of hats at different times. And I'm reminded of the story in Nehemiah when they were rebuilding the wall, and the challenge was given to them that you have to build something which is construction but you have to defend something, which is warfare. And you might remember the story of them having to fight or build with a sword in one hand and a trowel in the other. I think C.H. Spurgeon used that as the namesake of his article, his magazine that he wrote out. And so you see them having the building tools and the sword. They needed a balance, and we need balance. So here's what I would say to you. Again, on your notes, on your table, there are some half sheets. I've got some blanks. I'm going to give you 6 keys. I'm not a very good pastor, because if I were, it'd be 3 keys, and they would all start with the same letter. But I don't have a poem either. So this is 6 keys that have, as I thought about it since Monday, things that have helped me balance public service and the pastorate. And I hope to be able to tie them into you as a business leader. The first one is simply this, is prioritize your family. I cannot do anything if my family life is not strong. That means that I have to have a very understanding wife. And I have a very understanding wife. And I'm so grateful for her. God brought her into my life 34 years ago. And we have 5 children, 2 of which are adopted. We stay busy, but I'm so grateful that she supports and believes in what I do. Now, I will tell you, there have been some rough times, and those who are close to me know some of those struggles, and times I've had to say no to, whether it's a church event or a public event, because I need to spend that time with my wife or with my children. I wish I could say I did this perfectly every time. I don't. But that understanding that she gives and the fact that I make this my number one priority that I have to return to helps keep that balance. Now, I know that this is a business focus group. It's a business leaders luncheon. But I think it's a challenge for every business owner. We all know the stories of those who spend 60, 70, 80 hours a week on the job front providing for their family, and then later there's no family to enjoy the success with. You might remember the 1974 Harry Chapin song, Cats in the Cradle. That song, the older I get, the more it punches me in the gut, about the little boy who grows up to be just like dad, who didn't have time for his little boy. And the other little boy didn't have time for dad. So we, as business leaders, as public servants, we must prioritize our family. You know, the model for a Christian man in his marriage is to love his wife as Jesus loved the church. That is not easy. That is not easy at all, because it says he gave himself up for her. And how many times I have not done that, where I've chosen myself over my wife's needs or well wishes or desires. And so I would say that that has been something that comes back to me to remind me, if I'm going to do anything else, that's got to be right first. You know, Jesus or Paul in Ephesians chapter 5 told us 3 times, men, love your wives as Christ loved the church. If he says something once, you should listen to him. If he says it twice, you know it's important. If he says it 3 times, it's because we're men and we need to hear it more than once. And so guys, and ladies as well, business leaders, let's prioritize our family. The second thing, and these are things that, as I reflected this week, what has helped me. And this second one is one that I hope that you'll identify with, and that is to share the load. None of us are in this by ourselves. None of us are lone rangers or called to do that. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 says 2 are better than 1 because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. I'm blessed to have a strong support team around me. I have a wonderful secretary at the office, at the church office, a wonderful leadership team in the church who helps me lift up and pull those duties together. And the city of Pineville has a tremendous leadership team. When Mayor Fields became our mayor in 2000, one of the things that he brought with him to the city of Pineville was the phrase that together everyone achieves more. And we have lived under that. You do not hear him saying I this and I that. It's we. And that understanding of working as a team and sharing the load and coming together, I think about, and Councilman Dorn can bear witness to this. I've been on the council for 18 years. You've been on the council for 20 years. I think in all those years, I can probably count definitely on 2 hands and maybe on 1 the times that we haven't voted similarly. Not because we are robots who walk in lockstep, but because we work together, we communicate together, we make sure that we understand each other's burdens and each other's desires. And I have discovered, and he has discovered, for me, for example, if it's good for District 2, It's good for District 5. If it's good, and I'll tell you this as an example, I've used this before. There was a situation many years ago, several years ago, where we had some significant drainage issues in District 2. But after, and I forget which hurricane it was, Rich or the mayor could tell me which one it was, the parish had the opportunity to leverage those local funds to get some more significant major funds. And Councilman Dorn gave up what could have been significant in his district to benefit the city as a whole. And that's where I say sharing the load is understanding that you're not in this by yourself and you're working together. That I know it's a cliche that teamwork makes the dream work, but cliches are cliches because they're real and they communicate truth. So who do you share your load with? And who comes along beside you? As Christians, we're called to come into the yoke with Jesus, right? He said, take my yoke upon you, which means you're sharing the yoke with him. And outside of your spiritual life, who are you walking in life with? I have a note. It says literally here, I'm grateful for my personal therapist, Rich Dupree, because we meet often over a meal and share our woes, and he knows the things that I'm struggling with, and I know the things that he's struggling with, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for those friendships that we have together, and for the friend, you know, to be able to call Mayor Fields my friend, and to call Kevin. I mean, I'm being respectful and calling him Councilman Dorn, but he's my friend, and so we share this load together. The third thing I would say to you, and again, this is coming out of my personal reflection on how I balance it, is simply the phrase, follow the cloud. And you, at first glance, that may not mean a lot to you, but let me remind you of what happened when the Israelites came out of Egypt. How were they led? Was it the charismatic power of Moses with his divine GPS that he knew exactly where to go? No, it was a pillar of cloud, a pillar of fire that led them in every place that they were to go. And you might remember in Joshua chapter 3, when they're getting ready to go into the promised land, they're told, stay close to the ark because you've never been this way before. It's important that you stay close to the leading of the Lord. So this idea of follow the cloud for me means there is no substitute for my personal walk with Jesus Christ. No substitute for this. I'm sort of known as a professional prayer. Typically, if we're in a group, and Pastor Stewart understands this, anytime any of us pastors, Ricky understands this, anytime any of us pastors are in any group and somebody wants to do a prayer, Pastor, would you offer the prayer? And so I get called on to pray a lot. But just because I get to do that publicly doesn't mean I can neglect the private walk with God that I must have. And I don't think there's any replacement for that. So I would encourage you, if you're going to be a person of impact and you're going to maintain a balanced life, you must develop your spiritual life. You must develop your devotional life. No one can do that for you. I can't do that for my wife. I can't do that for my children. I have to do that for myself. I have to spend time with the Lord in the Word each day and develop those personal roots that go down. That means that I'm willing to pivot when the cloud pivots. When the Lord is leading, the Lord is guiding, and he goes in a different direction, I have to be willing to follow that. Let me show you what that might mean. I am not a good long-range planner. I don't have a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan I don't even know what I'm preaching on Sunday, Brother Stewart, I'll be honest with you. Today's my study day, so when I get back to the office, I'm going to work it out. But I don't have this, you know, 6-month preaching schedule and this 10-year. And I'm not saying those are wrong. Those are great tools for people who have that, and it's necessary. The city has a budget, and we have to allocate millions of dollars, and you have to plan. But if you're going to maintain balance, there's going to be times the Lord is going to say to you, put something down or pick something up. It's going to be important that you seek the Lord for every decision you make. And I'll give you, this is going to flow into another point, so I'm trying not to combine them too much. But every 4 years, for the last 18 years, the mayor and Rich have had to suffer through me telling them, I don't know if I'm running again. Because, not because I don't want to, it's just because I don't want to assume that I'm just supposed to keep doing it forever and ever and ever, amen. And so I pray and I seek the Lord each time and I ask him, Lord, what is the cloud still leading me in this direction? And that cloud, as I mentioned to you, has opened up those doors that so many opportunities to minister. And I have so many stories I could tell you of how following that cloud has guided my life instead of me making those long-term commitments that then I have to swallow. I have to, you know, it's better to not make a promise than to make a promise and not fulfill it. Number four, and this one I think all of the elected officials in the office will really understand, don't fight someone else's battles. When you get in politics, there's lots of body checks and full body contact. I mean, it's a full body contact sport. And it's really easy to be identified with an alliance or to be thought of, well, you're his friend, so therefore you must be this way. You're this person's friend, so therefore you're against this. And I learned this early on. When I was younger, if a friend of mine didn't like somebody, I didn't like them. Well, they don't like them, so I don't like them. Then I got to meeting this person. I realized, well, they're not what I thought they were. I would listen to someone else's perspective or heard their mindset about something. So I know that fighting battles can feel noble. We love the swashbuckling and the swinging of the swords, and we love the thrill of the battle, but not all battles are yours. And so that's why if you follow the cloud, you'll know when you're supposed to pick up the sword and which fight you're supposed to be engaged in. In Luke chapter 12, someone asked Jesus to tell his brother to share the inheritance. Tell my brother to give me my part. And Jesus did not enter into the battle. He wouldn't. He said, who made me your judge? Now, what's funny is he is the judge, right? Jesus is ultimately the judge of all. But he refused to get into another man's petty battle. This, if we could understand this, this would help church life. This would help politics. This would help the climate in Washington and what sometimes happens in Baton Rouge. Because we end up fighting other people's battles. There is a dirty side to politics. There is promises and backroom deals and the smoky rooms. And I had to learn the hard way to not be a tool for someone else or a pawn in someone else's struggle, to make sure that I'm following the cloud and doing what he gives me to do. That means that sometimes I'm friends with some really odd people. And I'm holding hands with people that won't hold hands with each other. But that's okay. It's what God has called me to do. In Proverbs 26, verse 17, it says, interfering with someone else's argument is as foolish as yanking a dog's ears. That's the New Living Translation, and that's pretty foolish. So why do we want to fight someone else's battle? These next two are, as I close this section out, these next two are critical to me. And they're important that that I keep a balance in my life. Number five is beware of autopilot. I could have said cruise control, but autopilot seems to make sense. We all, I think, are familiar with the story of 2 Samuel chapter 11. It starts out in verse number 1. It says it was the springtime when it was time for kings to go out to war, and David stayed back in Jerusalem. You remember that story? And what happens? Well, he sees Bathsheba, and it almost ends up costing him the entire kingdom, certainly cost the life of a child, the life of Uriah the Hittite, cost the friendship of Ahithophel, his great, wonderful counselor, who was Bathsheba's grandfather. I mean, it just creates all because he just put it on autopilot. Hey, things are going good. I can just kind of sit back and relax. I can just coast. I believe that this is a danger for us, that if we ever allow things to just coast, allow things to just, I don't really have to be as intentional as I once was. I don't have to go that extra mile, do that extra part. I've kind of earned the right to relax. David thought he had earned the right to relax, and it almost cost him the kingdom. As a person involved, and I said to you a while ago, every 4 years I seek the Lord. Am I running? Am I to run again? Doesn't mean I'm to win, but am I to offer myself in this role? And as I seek the Lord, when the moment he says no, Nathan won't be doing that again. I'm not going to put it on autopilot and just continually always be assuming that this is what I'm supposed to do. I think that we have to guard our hearts. Those of us who are involved in public life, we really have to guard our hearts. Because integrity is something that nobody else can really see. You can fake integrity. You can fake it, and people do it all the time. We can front. We can put up a good picture of how things are. But inside our hearts, we know if we're people of integrity. We know if we're doing the right thing because it's the right thing. And I can't tell you, you know, there are times that I, this is embarrassing to admit, but there have been times that I've thought to myself, well, I'm a city councilman. I can run that red light. I can go through that stop sign. I don't have to wear my seatbelt. I know the cops. And those thoughts are dangerous. They're dangerous to my heart because they begin to nibble away at integrity, which cannot afford to have a crack. There are no such things as surface cracks. They're all deep cracks. So we must guard our hearts and not allow ourselves to put things on autopilot, just assume it's okay. You know, in church life, we've always done it this way before, is a death knell, right? It's a death statement. And so we must guard our hearts and keep ourselves pure. And that means never, ever putting things on autopilot for me. The last one is simply this. And I saved it for last because it has to be kind of a foundational for everything else. It can't be about you. Public service, leadership, business life, none of these things can be about you. They have to be about who you're serving. Rick Warren's purpose-driven life, whether you like him, love him, hate him, or adore him, the first four words of his book were powerful. His book opens with these words, "It's not about you." That mindset has helped me, and I'm going to tell you a little story that really brings this home, and I'm so glad that Councilman Dorn is here. In 2006, my father was diagnosed with cancer and went through a difficult time of treatment, as anyone who's diagnosed with cancer would, through the chemotherapy. It was actually, I was associate pastor, he was senior pastor, and he stepped aside in a sabbatical, and I was placed as interim pastor during that season. Went through the chemotherapy, had to do the social distancing before social distancing was cool, had to wear a mask before wearing masks was cool. Wait, is it cool? Okay, I scratched that part. But he did all that in 2006. And then in 2007, on one of his follow-ups, was told that the cancer had come back. And this time it was in his bone marrow, and it was considered a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he was sent to MD Anderson. I remember getting that news. We were actually at the Louisiana Municipal Association annual convention in Monroe when I got the news that that the cancer had come back. And I made a beeline that night and drove home to be with my mom and dad. I was rocked. Drove back up to Monroe for the rest of the conference and the responsibilities we have. Was sharing the story with some of my friends and people that I serve with. And Councilman Dorn looked me in the eye and said, "Nathan, this isn't about him. God's going to do something in his life that's going to touch a lot of people. What he's going through is not about him." And I appreciated that encouragement. And I'm going to tell you how that sustained us. Over the next several months, we made multiple trips to MD Anderson. By this time, my dad had fully retired. He was 66 and had fully retired from pastorate, and I had been installed as senior pastor of our church. And I'm supporting him in this role. And on one of our trips, our final trip to MD Anderson, we sat down with the doctors after they had rerun a battery of tests two times. And the doctor's going through his pad, and he tells us that each test that they did was negative for cancer. And I remember asking the doctor, "Help me understand this. We have a battery of tests that say it's stage 4 cancer in his bone marrow, and you're saying there's no cancer. Help me understand this." And he simply said, "I don't know." And he pointed up. I'm grateful for that little witness that he pointed up. We still walked out of that room, walked over to the elevator, and my dad looked at me and he said, "Did you hear what I heard?" I mean, we were stunned. That was in 2007. This is 2021. My dad turned 81 years old 2 weeks ago. Wonderful health. Has had the opportunity to continue to minister in tremendous ways, touching people's lives. And his story has encouraged so many. Not because he's some great person or we had some miracle, whatever. God in his sovereign will somehow chose to show grace to my father. But it wasn't about him. It was about giving hope. It was about giving courage. And I'll never forget Councilman Dorn looking me in the eye and telling me it's not about him. And that's what our service has to be. It's not about us. The hardship we go through, the difficulty we struggle through, the victories we gain, none of it can be about us. Look, in politics, we love us politicians. We like our names in stone. You give us a chance to put our name in granite somewhere where the next generation can read our name. But it's not, can't be about us. It can't be about, I mean, we want to be known, but isn't it better to be known in heaven? Isn't it better that rather than any granite stone work on earth for a Lamb's Book of Life to be open and your name to be written and for the voice from the throne to say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Amen. Enter into the joy of your master. And so I would say to you that whatever your role in business, remember it's not about you. Even if the business is named after you, it's not about you. I don't want to steal John Valenzuela's thunder, but I'll tell you one of the things he's going to tell you is that restaurant that they opened up is not for him. If you've ever had a conversation with him, he'll tell you, this isn't for me and my family. This is for the people. And, all right, Sylvia, he says it all the time. This is for the people. This is for others. And when we live with that mindset of who we're serving and the people who are going to be blessed by the efforts that God has given us to achieve, that's when we have the right balance. Jesus taught us to lay down our lives for others, to serve, to be willing to be unnoticed. He taught us to pick up a basin and a towel and place ourselves at the feet of people who were arguing about us and jockeying for position and maybe even betraying. That's what motivates me as a pastor, as a public servant, is I want to be like Jesus. Thank you, Pastor Stewart.